Obeying the directions, I wended my way alongside the banks of a canal. Darkness fell, the outskirts of the jungle village were alive with winking fireflies and the howls of nearby jackals. The moonlight was too faint to supply any reassurance. I stumbled on for 2 hours. Welcome clang of a cowbell. My repeated shouts eventually brought a peasant to my side. I am looking for Angopal Babu. No such person lives in our village. The man's tone was surly. You are probably a lying detective. Hoping to allay suspicion in his politically troubled mind, I touchingly explained my predicament. He took me to his home and offered a hospitable welcome. Ranbajpur is far from here, he remarked. At the crossroad, you should have turned left, not right. My earlier informant, I thought sadly, was a distinct menace to travelers. After a relishable meal of coarse rice, lentil, and curry of potatoes with raw bananas, I retired to a small hut adjoining the courtyard. In the distance, villagers were singing to the loud accompaniment of mridangas and cymbals. Sleep was inconsiderable that night. I prayed deeply to be directed to the secret yogi, Ramgopal. As the first streaks of dawn penetrated the fissures of my dark room, I set out for Ranbajpur. Crossing rough paddy fields, I trudged over sickled stumps of the prickly plant and mounds of dried clay. An occasionally met peasant would inform me, invariably, that my destination was only across or 2 miles. In 6 hours the sun traveled victoriously from horizon to meridian, but I began to feel that I would ever be distant from Ranbajpur by 1 crosshaw. At mid-afternoon my world was still an endless paddy field. Heat pouring from the voidless sky was bringing me to near collapse. As a man approached at leisurely pace, I hardly dared utter my usual question, lest it summon the monotonous, just a crosshaw. The stranger halted beside me. Short and slight, he was physically unimpressive save for an extraordinary pair of piercing dark eyes. I was planning to leave Ranbajpur, but your purpose was good, so I awaited you. He shook his finger in my astounded face. Aren't you clever to think that, unannounced, you could pounce on me? That Professor Bihari had no right to give you my address. Considering that introduction of myself would be mere verbosity in the presence of this master, I stood speechless, somewhat hurt at my reception. His next remark was abruptly put. Tell me, where do you think God is? Why, he is within me and everywhere. I doubtless looked as bewildered as I felt. All-pervading, eh? The saint chuckled. Then why, young sir? Did you fail to bow before the infinite in the stone symbol at the Tariq's war temple yesterday? Your pride caused you the punishment of being misdirected by the passerby who was not bothered by fine distinctions of left and right. Today, too, you have had a fairly uncomfortable time of it. I agreed wholeheartedly, wonderstruck that an omniscient eye hid within the unremarkable body before me. Healing strength emanated from the yogi. I was instantly refreshed in the scorching field. The devotee inclines to think his path to God is the only way, he said. Yoga, through which divinity is found within, is doubtless the highest road, so Lahiri Mahasaya has told us. But discovering the Lord within, we soon perceive him without. Holy shrines at Tariq's war and elsewhere are rightly venerated as nuclear centers of spiritual power. The saint's censorious attitude vanished. His eyes became compassionately soft. He patted my shoulder. Young yogi, I see you are running away from your master. He has everything you need, you must return to him. Mountains cannot be your guru. Ramgopal was repeating the same thought which Sri Yukteswar had expressed at our last meeting. Masters are under no cosmic compulsion to limit their residence. My companion glanced at me quizzically. The Himalayas in India and Tibet have no monopoly on saints. What one does not trouble to find within will not be discovered by transporting the body hither and yon. As soon as the devotee is willing to go even to the ends of the earth for spiritual enlightenment, his guru appears nearby. I silently agreed, recalling my prayer in the Benares hermitage, followed by the meeting with Sri Yukteswar in a crowded lane. Are you able to have a little room where you can close the door and be alone? Yes. I reflected that this saint descended from the general to the particular with disconcerting speed. That is your cave. The yogi bestowed on me a gaze of illumination which I have never forgotten. That is your sacred mountain. That is where you will find the kingdom of God. His simple words instantaneously banished my lifelong obsession for the Himalayas. In a burning paddy field I awoke from the Monticolus dreams of eternal snows. Young sir, your divine thirst is laudable. I feel great love for you. Rangopal took my hand and led me to a quaint hamlet. The adobe houses were covered with coconut leaves and adorned with rustic entrances. The saint seated me on the umbrageous bamboo platform of his small cottage. After giving me sweetened lime juice and a piece of rock candy, he entered his patio and assumed the lotus posture. In about 4 hours I opened my meditative eyes and saw that the moonlit figure of the yogi was still motionless. As I was sternly reminding my stomach that man does not live by bread alone, Rangopal approached me. I see you are famished, food will be ready soon. A fire was kindled under a clay oven on the patio, rice and dal were quickly served on large banana leaves. My host courteously refused my aid in all cooking chores. The guest is God, a Hindu proverb, has commanded devout observance from time immemorial. In my later world travels, I was charmed to see that a similar respect for visitors is manifested in rural sections of many countries. The city dweller finds the keen edge of hospitality blunted by superabundance of strange faces. The sleepless saint. The marks of men seemed remotely dim as I squatted by the yogi in the isolation of the tiny jungle village. The cottage room was mysterious with a mellow light. Rangopal arranged some torn blankets on the floor for my bed, and seated himself on a straw mat. Overwhelmed by his spiritual magnetism, I ventured a request. Sir, why don't you grant me a samadhi? Dear one, I would be glad to convey the divine contact, but it is not my place to do so. The saint looked at me with half-closed eyes. Your master will bestow that experience shortly. Your body is not tuned just yet. As a small lamp cannot withstand excessive electrical voltage, so your nerves are unready for the cosmic current. If I gave you the infinite ecstasy right now, you would burn as if every cell were on fire. You are asking illumination from me, the yogi continued musingly, while I am wandering inconsiderable as I am, and with the little meditation I have done if I have succeeded in pleasing God, and what worth I may find in his eyes at the final reckoning. Sir, have you not been single-heartedly seeking God for a long time? I have not done much. Bihari must have told you something of my life. For 20 years I occupied a secret grotto, meditating 18 hours a day. Then I moved to a more inaccessible cave and remained there for 25 years, entering the yoga union for 20 hours daily. I did not need sleep, for I was ever with God. My body was more rested in the complete calmness of the superconsciousness than it could be by the partial peace of the ordinary subconscious state. The muscles relax during sleep, but the heart, lungs, and circulatory system are constantly at work. They get no rest. In superconsciousness, the internal organs remain in a state of suspended animation, electrified by the cosmic energy. By such means I have found it unnecessary to sleep for years. The time will come when you too will dispense with sleep. My goodness, you have meditated for so long and yet are unsure of the Lord's favor. I gazed at him in astonishment. Then what about us poor mortals? Well, don't you see, my dear boy, that God is eternity itself? To assume that one can fully know him by 45 years of meditation is rather a preposterous expectation. Babaji assures us, however, that even a little meditation saves one from the dire fear of death and after-death states. Do not fix your spiritual ideal on a small mountain, but hitch it to the star of unqualified divine attainment. If you work hard, you will get there. Enthralled by the prospect, I asked him for further enlightening words. He related a wondrous story of his first meeting with Lahiri Mahasaya's guru, Babaji. Around midnight Rangopal fell into silence, and I lay down on my blankets. Closing my eyes, I saw flashes of lightning, The vast space within me was a chamber of molten light. I opened my eyes and observed the same dazzling radiance. The room became a part of that infinite vault which I beheld with interior vision. "Why don't you go to sleep?"
"Sir, how can I sleep in the presence of lightning, blazing whether my eyes are shut or open?"
"You are blessed to have this experience. The spiritual radiations are not easily seen." The saint added a few words of affection. At dawn Rangopal gave me rock candies and said I must depart. I felt such reluctance to bid him farewell that tears coursed down my cheeks.
"I will not let you go empty-handed,"
the yogi spoke tenderly. "I will do something for you." He smiled and looked at me steadfastly. I stood rooted to the ground, peace rushing like a mighty flood through the gates of my eyes. I was instantaneously healed of a pain in my back, which had troubled me intermittently for years. Renewed, bathed in a sea of luminous joy, I wept no more. After touching the saint's feet, I sauntered into the jungle, making my way through its tropical tangle until I reached Tarek's War. There I made a second pilgrimage to the famous shrine, and prostrated myself fully before the altar. The round stone enlarged before my inner vision until it became the cosmical spheres, ring within ring, zone after zone, all dowered with divinity. I entrained happily an hour later for Calcutta. My travels ended, not in the lofty mountains, but in the Himalayan presence of my master. Chapter 14. An Experience in Cosmic Consciousness. "I am here, Guruji." My shamefacedness spoke more. "I quently for me. Let us go to the kitchen and find something to eat." Sri Yukteswar's manner was as natural as if hours and not days had separated us.
"Master, I must have disappointed you by my abrupt departure from my duties here. I thought you might be angry with me."
"No, of course not. Wrath springs only from thwarted desires. I do not expect anything from others, so their actions cannot be in opposition to wishes of mine.
I would not use you for my own ends. I am happy only in your own true happiness."
"Sir, one hears of divine love in a vague way, but for the first time I am having a concrete example in your angelic self. In the world, even a father does not easily forgive his son if he leaves his parents' business without warning. But you show not the slightest vexation, though you must have been put to great inconvenience by the many unfinished tasks I left behind." We looked into each other's eyes, where tears were shining. A blissful wave engulfed me. I was conscious that the Lord, in the form of my Guru, was expanding the small ardors of my heart into the incompressible reaches of cosmic love. A few mornings later I made my way to Master's empty sitting room. I planned to meditate, but my laudable purpose was unshared by disobedient thoughts. They scattered like birds before the hunter.
"Mukunda." Sri Yukteswar's voice sounded from a distant inner balcony.
I felt as rebellious as my thoughts. "Master always urges me to meditate," I muttered to myself. "He should not disturb me when he knows why I came to his room." He summoned me again. I remained obstinately silent. The third time his tone held rebuke.
"Sir, I am meditating," I shouted protestingly.
"I know how you are meditating," my guru called out, "with your mind distributed like leaves in a storm. Come here to me." Snubbed and exposed, I made my way sadly to his side.
"Poor boy, the mountains couldn't give what you wanted."
Master spoke caressively, comfortingly. His calm gaze was unfathomable.
"Your heart's desire shall be fulfilled."
Sri Yukteswar seldom indulged in riddles. I was bewildered. He struck gently on my chest above the heart. My body became immovably rooted. Breath was drawn out of my lungs as if by some huge magnet. Soul and mind instantly lost their physical bondage, and streamed out like a fluid piercing light from my every pore. The flesh was as though dead, yet in my intense awareness I knew that never before had I been fully alive. My sense of identity was no longer narrowly confined to a body, but embraced the circumambient atoms. People on distant streets seemed to be moving gently over my own remote periphery. The roots of plants and trees appeared through a dim transparency of the soil. I discerned the inward flow of their sap,
The whole vicinity lay bare before me. My ordinary frontal vision was now changed to a vast spherical sight, simultaneously all perceptive. Through the back of my head I saw men strolling far down Rayagat Road, and noticed also a white cow who was leisurely approaching. When she reached the space in front of the open ashram gate, I observed her with my two physical eyes. As she passed by, behind the brick wall, I saw her clearly still. All objects within my panoramic gaze trembled and vibrated like quick motion pictures. My body, masters, the pillared courtyard, the furniture and floor, the trees and sunshine, occasionally became violently agitated, until all melted into a luminescent sea, even as sugar crystals, thrown into a glass of water, dissolve after being shaken. The unifying light alternated with materializations of form, the metamorphoses revealing the law of cause and effect in creation. An oceanic joy broke upon calm endless shores of my soul. The Spirit of God, I realized, is exhaustless bliss. His body is countless tissues of light. A swelling glory within me began to envelop towns, continents, the earth, solar and stellar systems, tenuous nebulae, and floating universes. The entire cosmos, gently luminous, like a city seen afar at night, glimmered within the infinitude of my being. The sharply etched global outlines faded somewhat at the farthest edges. There I could see a mellow radiance, ever undiminished. It was indescribably subtle. The planetary pictures were formed of a gross light. The divine dispersion of rays poured from an eternal source, blazing into galaxies, transfigured with ineffable auras. Again and again I saw the creative beams condense into constellations, then resolve into sheets of transparent flame. By rhythmic reversion, sextillion worlds passed into diaphanous luster, fire became firmament. I cognized the center of the Empyrean as a point of intuitive perception in my heart. Irradiating splendor issued from my nucleus to every part of the universal structure. Blissful Amrita, the nectar of immortality, pulsed through me with a quicksilver-like fluidity. The creative voice of God I heard resounding as Om, the vibration of the cosmic motor. Suddenly the breath returned to my lungs. With a disappointment almost unbearable, I realized that my infinite immensity was lost. Once more I was limited to the humiliating cage of a body, not easily accommodative to the spirit. Like a prodigal child, I had run away from my macrocosmic home and imprisoned myself in a narrow microcosm. My guru was standing motionless before me. I started to drop at his holy feet in gratitude for the experience in cosmic consciousness which I had long passionately sought. He held me upright, and spoke calmly, unpretentiously. You must not get overdrunk with ecstasy. Much work yet remains for you in the world. Come, let us sweep the balcony floor, then we shall walk by the Ganges. I fetched a broom, master, I knew, was teaching me the secret of balanced living. The soul must stretch over the cosmogonic abysses, while the body performs its daily duties. When we set out later for a stroll, I was still entranced in unspeakable rapture. I saw our bodies as two astral pictures, moving over a road by the river whose essence was sheer light. It is the Spirit of God that actively sustains every form and force in the universe, yet He is transcendental and aloof in the blissful uncreated void beyond the worlds of vibratory phenomena, Master explained. Saints who realize their divinity even while in the flesh know a similar twofold existence. Conscientiously engaging in earthly work, they yet remain immersed in an inward beatitude. The Lord has created all men from the limitless joy of His being. Though they are painfully cramped by the body, God nevertheless expects that souls made in His image shall ultimately rise above all sense identifications and reunite with Him. The cosmic vision left many permanent lessons. By daily stilling my thoughts, I could win release from the delusive, for the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son. John 5:22. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, He hath declared Him. John 1:18. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father. John 14:12. But the Comforter, which is the Holy Ghost, whom the Father will send in my name, he shall teach you all things, and bring all things to your remembrance, whatsoever I have said to you. John 14:26. These biblical words refer to the threefold nature of God as Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Sat, Tat, Om in the Hindu scriptures. God the Father is the absolute, unmanifested, existing beyond vibratory creation. God the Son is the Christ consciousness, Brahma or Kitastha Chaitanya, existing within vibratory creation. This Christ consciousness is the only begotten or sole reflection of the uncreated infinite. Its outward manifestation or witness is Om or Holy Ghost, the divine, creative, invisible power which structures all creation through vibration. Om the blissful comforter is heard in meditation and reveals to the devotee the ultimate truth. Conviction that my body was a mass of flesh and bones, traversing the hard soil of matter. The breath and the restless mind, I saw, were like storms which lashed the ocean of light into waves of material forms: earth, sky, human beings, animals, birds, trees. No perception of the infinite as one light could be had except by calming those storms. As often as I silenced the two natural tumults, I beheld the multitudinous waves of creation melt into one lucent sea, even as the waves of the ocean, their tempests subsiding, serenely dissolve into unity. A master bestows the divine experience of cosmic consciousness when his disciple, by meditation, has strengthened his mind to a degree where the vast vistas would not overwhelm him. The experience can never be given through one's mere intellectual willingness or open-mindedness. Only adequate enlargement by yoga practice and devotional bhakti can prepare the mind to absorb the liberating shock of omnipresence. It comes with a natural inevitability to the sincere devotee. His intense craving begins to pull at God with an irresistible force. The Lord, as the cosmic vision, is drawn by the seeker's magnetic ardor into his range of consciousness. I wrote, in my later years, the following poem, Samadhi, endeavoring to convey the glory of its cosmic state, vanished the veils of light and shade, lifted every vapor of sorrow, sailed away all dawns of fleeting joy, gone the dim sensory mirage. Love, hate, health, disease, life, death, perished these false shadows on the screen of duality. Waves of laughter, silas of sarcasm, melancholic whirlpools, melting in the vast sea of bliss. The storm of Maya stilled by magic wand of intuition deep. The universe, forgotten dream, subconsciously lurks, ready to invade my newly wakened memory divine. I live without the cosmic shadow, but it is not, bereft of me, as the sea exists without the waves, experience in cosmic consciousness, but they breathe not without the sea. Dreams, wakings, states of deep terrier sleep, present, past, future, no more for me, but ever present, all flowing I, everywhere. Planets, stars, stardust, earth, volcanic bursts of doomsday cataclysms, creation's molding furnace, glaciers of silent X-rays, burning electron floods, thoughts of all men, past, present, to come, every blade of grass, myself, mankind, each particle of universal dust, anger, greed, good, bad, salvation, lust, I swallowed, transmuted all into a vast ocean of blood of my own one being, smoldering joy, oft-puffed by meditation blinding my tearful eyes, burst into immortal flames of bliss, consumed my tears, my frame, my all. Thou art I am thou, knowing, knower, known, as one. Tranquilled, unbroken thrill, eternally living, ever new peace. Enjoyable beyond imagination of expectancy, samadhi bliss. Not an unconscious state or mental chloroform without willful return, samadhi but extends my conscious realm beyond limits of the mortal frame to farthest boundary of eternity where I, the cosmic sea, watch the little ego floating in me. The sparrow, each grain of sand, fall not without my sight. All space floats like an iceberg in my mental sea. Colossal container, I, of all things made. By deeper, longer, thirsty, guru-given meditation comes this celestial samadhi. Mobile murmurs of atoms are heard, the dark earth, mountains, vales, lo. Molten liquid. Flowing seas change into vapors of nebulae. Orm blows upon vapors, opening wondrously their veils. Oceans stand revealed, shining electrons, till, at last sound of the cosmic drum, vanish the grosser lights into eternal rays of all-pervading bliss. From joy I came, for joy I live, in sacred joy I melt. Ocean of mind, I drink all creation's waves. Four veils of solid, liquid, vapor, light, lift aright. Myself, in everything, enters the great myself. Gone forever, fitful, flickering shadows of mortal memory. Spotless is my mental sky, below, ahead, and high above. Eternity and I, one united ray. A tiny bubble of laughter, I am become the sea of mirth itself. Sri Yukt's war taught me how to summon the blessed experience at will, and also how to transmit it to others if their intuitive channels were developed. For months I entered the ecstatic union, comprehending why the Upanishads say God is Rasa, the most relishable. One day, however, I took a problem to master. I want to know, sir, when shall I find God? You have found him. Oh no, sir, I don't think so. My guru was smiling. I am sure you aren't expecting a venerable personage, adorning a throne in some antiseptic corner of the cosmos. I see, however, that you are imagining that the possession of miraculous powers is knowledge of God. One might have the whole universe, and find the Lord elusive still. Spiritual advancement is not measured by one's outward powers, but only by the depth of his bliss in meditation. Ever new joy is God. He is inexhaustible. As you continue your meditations during the years, he will beguile you with an infinite ingenuity. Devotees like yourself who have found the way to God never dream of exchanging him for any other happiness. He is seductive beyond thought of competition. How quickly we weary of earthly pleasures. Desire for material things is endless, man is never satisfied completely, and pursues one goal after another. The something else he seeks is the Lord, who alone can grant lasting joy. Outward longings drive us from the Eden within, they offer false pleasures which only impersonate soul happiness. Experience in cosmic consciousness, the lost paradise is quickly regained through divine meditation. As God is unanticipatory ever-newness, we never tire of him. Can we be surfeited with bliss, delightfully varied throughout eternity? I understand now, sir, why saints call the Lord unfathomable. Even everlasting life could not suffice to appraise him. That is true, but he is also near and dear. After the mind has been cleared by Kriya Yoga of sensory obstacles, meditation furnishes a twofold proof of God. Ever new joy is evidence of his existence, convincing to our very atoms. Also, in meditation one finds his instant guidance, his adequate response to every difficulty. I see, Guruji, you have solved my problem. I smiled gratefully. I do realize now that I have found God, for whenever the joy of meditation has returned subconsciously during my active hours, I have been subtly directed to adopt the right course in everything, even details. Human life is beset with sorrow until we know how to tune in with the divine will, whose right course is often baffling to the egoistic intelligence. God bears the burden of the cosmos, he alone can give unerring counsel. Chapter 15, The Cauliflower Robbery. Aster, a gift for you. These six huge cauliflowers were planted with my hands. I have watched over their growth with the tender care of a mother nursing her child. I presented the basket of vegetables with a ceremonial flourish. Thank you. Sri Yukteswar's smile was warm with appreciation. Please keep them in your room, I shall need them tomorrow for a special dinner. I had just arrived in Puri to spend my college summer vacation with my guru at his seaside hermitage. Built by master and his disciples, The cheerful little two-storied retreat fronts on the Bay of Bengal. I awoke early the following morning, refreshed by the salty sea breezes and the charm of my surroundings.